Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Just want to talk to you a little bit before we jump into this next episode. You heard me say it a million times. Please give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this free. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Make an amazing product. Even if you're not a rifle hunter, pick up one of their glassing pads. You will thank me for it later. And I'm happy to announce our partnership with Primos and Bushnell. I've been using the Primos Hyperdome single reed. It's a great cow call. And I used a Hyperdome mini to make calf sounds. And if you listen to my podcast with Joel Turner, you'll know how important it is to have that in your bag of tricks to be able to make calf sounds. Bushnell makes awesome trail cameras. And if you go back and you look on my blog back in 2013 and in 2015, I did independent tests on trail cameras and Bushnell came up out on top both times. This season, behind the scenes, I did another trail camera test on a few different brands and Bushnell rose to the top again in bang for the buck, quality, and overall usability. So we decided to partner up with them. And the great thing about that is I'm going to pass along a discount to you guys. You can save 15% if you go to their website and use promo code STL02. That's STL02. Save 15% on anything. Doesn't have to be the things that I use. We use their ground blinds, a couple of their elk calls, and we use the trophy cam. It's an excellent product. Go check them out. I also want to talk to you a little bit about, I know it seems early in the season, but if you don't already know, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I am an outfitter here in Arizona and I do run hunts in South Dakota. My busiest time of year is archery deer season here in Arizona. We take out just a handful of, I'm busy because I only take out a select few amount of clients. So if it's something you want to get in on, I have a couple slots left. And I'm telling you this now, early in the season, because people always scramble after they realize that they didn't get enough hunting in for the year or they didn't draw the tags that they want to get in on that hunt. Also, javelina season. The draw is going to be coming up in the next couple of months. I know it seems far away, but it's really not. October is not that far away. And if you want to get in on an excellent hunt, or if you've never been out west or to Arizona and you want to try something new during a time that there's nothing going on, what are you going to do in February? Twiddle your thumbs? Come out. We have amazing hunts. You could do it with a bow. You could do it with a rifle. You could do it with the muzzleloader. Just all around inexpensive, good time, good way to spend the last few months of winter and come out and experience nice weather on a super fun hunt. Get in contact with me. We fill up quick. I take anywhere between 12 to 16 hunters a year on that hunt and the camps fill up really quick. So give us a call. Check out daysinthewild.com. Send me a message. Any way you want to get in contact with me, social media, we'd like to put together a hunt for you. So without further ado, let's jump into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Today we are going to talk high country mule deer in general. And I got a guy that actually was suggested to me by Henry Ferguson. And Henry and I have been buds for a long time, and I respect him and so when I asked him who I should get on, and he told me to get on, Omni Warner, I was all about it. So what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing good. Just enjoying the summer.
Yeah, you're able to do that with all this craziness going on.
Yeah, this has actually been an interesting time because it's reset a lot of things in life, right? I mean, normally we would have been traveling all over at soccer tournaments or dance or one thing or another, but a lot of our time spent at the house working on the garden or camping trips with the family. So I think it's actually been really good for our family. We spend a ton of time together.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been an enjoyable summer.
It's been a double-edged sword for us, you know. Sometimes being together a little too much is not great.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's been pretty cool. Like I really can't complain. You know, things were pretty good as far as business is concerned. Things are good with the family. Everybody's healthy, and you know, we've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with each other. We're gonna go up and we rented a cabin a couple of weeks ago, and then we're going to do that again for 4th of July. So
yeah,
definitely. It's definitely been nice. And yes, I've been doing a lot of stuff around the house too. I just remodeled my backyard a little bit because, you know, you're spending so much time at home. You're like, you know, we gotta do something for these kids. They gotta do something to have some kind of, entertainment. And the pool just by itself wasn't cutting it. So I've just made some improvements back there. Do me a favor. Give me a little rundown about yourself and who you are and what you do, and we'll hit some of these questions.
Sure. Yeah. So on my Warner, I live in New Mexico. I've got three brothers, was raised hunting in the outdoors with my dad and brothers. Mm-hmm. Always kind of had that passion since we were little kids. My dad introduced me real young age to bow hunting as well. And so we bow hunted, rifle hunted, whatever we could. It's just, you know, growing up, it was easier to get archer tags. And like I said, my dad used to shoot a bow when we were little kids as well. So just kind of grew up naturally with archery hunting. I love archery in general. And so just kind of gravitated more towards that, but I'll pick up a muzzleloader rifle. It doesn't matter. Whatever I can kind of get a tag on. And then, you know, living in New Mexico, there's a lot of opportunities. You can hunt deer, elk, antelope, if you can ever get a tag. Obviously, got a lot of exotics as well. And so, you know, we just always tried to get, growing up, it was always about having a deer tag and an elk tag. And then as I started becoming a young adult or moving into college, tags in New Mexico just got harder and harder to draw, both elk tags and deer tags. A lot of the deer tags actually went to draw processes versus over the counter. And so, I mean, that's kind of where we started. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, I didn't have the money to explore and go other areas. But when I got out of college, it's like, that was something I always wanted. That was one of the reasons why I went to school, to try to get a degree and a good job, was so that I could afford to actually travel or go hunt and hunt different areas. And so I just really love hunting the West, hunting deer and elk. Haven't had very many antelope tags, and then, you know, anything else I can fill in the middle of it. So luckily, we've got two boys and then a little girl. Both my boys love to hunt as well. And so we've gone on multiple hunting trips with them. My wife has hunted. In fact, she has a deer tag this year. So it's kind of just on and off based on how the kids' schedule works out. And our daughter is only 8 years old now. She just barely turned 8. So we'll see if she dives into the hunting or if she's more of a princess, or I don't know. It's, depends on what day of the week it is. She's either wearing a dress or a dress with a bow, or I mean, you just never know.
Yeah. I have my two oldest are girls, and depends, like you said, depends on the day. My oldest, Ella, she's had the chance to harvest a few couple animals now, and you'll probably hear them in the background over there. My wife's trying to shut all of them up. I apologize for the next 10 minutes or so. They're probably gonna be loud. And anyway, so she's had an opportunity, but you know, she's definitely not passionate about it. I think she does it just because daddy does it and she wants to spend some time with me. I would love her to be able to develop a passion for it. And so we can, you know, have chats about it and, you know, be our little thing. But the middle child, Olivia, she could care less. She used to kind of like shooting her bow, and now that's not even, like, she don't really care about it anymore. So I ask her all the time. She don't want to do it. And my youngest son, depending on the day, he loves to fish. All three of them love to fish, which is good. he loves to fish. He likes to go in the woods, and he likes to go with me, and he, you know, and he'll go on kicks where he likes to shoot the bow for a few days a week, and then he'll, you know, forget about it for whatever, but we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to jam it down any one of their throats, you know. I think that's something they kind of got to find on their own in a way, you know, be influenced, but got to find on their own. So,
I agree.
So you live in New Mexico. Now, from what I've seen, you do quite a bit of like maybe high country, but higher country mule deer, or do you hunt a lot in the desert too?
It's really just where I can get tags. More interested in making sure that I do have a tag. That's every goal. That's kind of like my goal, is to make sure that I have an elk tag and a deer tag, at least one.
Right.
And then I know that, you know, my kids will usually draw tags. My wife, some brothers, they're his kids. Somebody else will draw tags, so I don't need to overload my hunts. My wife probably feels like I overload every fall anyways, but getting one or two, and then just work from there. And then, you know, the advantage that I have living where we're at is, well, New Mexico doesn't have a point system, right? And so as a resident, right, you have a little bit better odds as a resident, but even at that, deer tags are so hard to come by in New Mexico in the areas that I like to hunt anyways. Mm-hmm. And then it's not very far for me to go hunt, whether it's Arizona, Utah, Colorado, even if I was to run up to Wyoming. I haven't hunted Wyoming yet, but, you know, all that, we live right in the Four Corners area, so four states are literally within a stone throw of our house.
Gotcha.
So that's really convenient.
So do you utilize coming over to Arizona, get an archery tag, and hunting over here pretty often? Or
I have. Yep. I've hunted coos deer in Arizona. I've shot, I think, two coos deer with my bow in Arizona.
Nice.
I've actually shot, I shot a bison. I had a cow tag a few years ago. I shot a bison. And then I've had an elk tag as well. So it just kind of depends on if I can draw a tag or, you know, if I don't have a fall. I love hunting the January season too.
Yeah.
New Mexico and Arizona both have that January season. That's a lot of fun. And so I'll try to hunt one or the other, or if my kids have a tag, then I end up hunting with my kids. And fortunately for them, they've all had tags probably for like the last 8 years. It seems like they've always got a tag somewhere in New Mexico. They have the youth program and it's a little bit easier for them to get tags. So I haven't hunted Arizona as much in the January season just because I've been hunting with them. But nice. They're no longer youth anymore. So we're sending our middle child off to college this fall. He's no longer going to qualify for youth tags. Maybe there'll be more opportunity in January. Maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah, seriously. I haven't had an opportunity to go hunt there in January, mainly because of, you know, the hunting here is so good during January that it's hard for me to go somewhere else, but I've wanted to. There's been a couple of years where, and it's been a while since I did that, but a couple of years where I tagged out real early and I was like, all right, what am I going to do for a month? But I've wanted to look into that. How does that work? Like, didn't it used to be over the counter for the archery January tag, right? Now it's a draw.
Yeah, it's like everywhere in the West, it's getting harder and harder to get tags. So all of New Mexico deer tags are draw tags.
Yeah.
So you have to draw them up front.
But it wasn't too long ago, like in the last 10 years, it used to be over the counter, right?
It did. You used to buy tags over the counter at one point in time, and everything's migrated to a draw. There used to be a lot of leftovers, and you could just pick them up as a leftover.
Mm-hmm.
And anymore, I mean, that's even getting harder and harder, so.
Gotcha.
Take advantage of Arizona while it's still over the counter, because that probably won't last forever.
No, and I don't think it's going to, because they've been pushing it so hard. I mean, they've been like paying influencers to talk about it and bringing a whole bunch of people from out of state. The only, like, I have a feeling they're either going to end up splitting it up where the mule deer tag is no longer part of the archery over the counter. And maybe just keep the coos deer, because the coos are such a harder species, in my opinion, and I think it shows for success rate across the board. They're harder to kill with archery equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That it's kind of self-regulates itself, you know, even though there's a shit ton of people here trying to kill him. You know, the success rate is so low that it kind of evens out. You know, they don't have a problem, you know, keeping the carrying capacity they want.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so how do you approach your season? How do you approach your scheduling, you know, choosing where you're going to hunt and, you know, your planning?
Yeah, that's probably evolved a little bit for me in time, but I try to find a state that I can draw a deer tag in, and I love hunting Colorado. I mean, that's really my favorite mule deer state, but I'll try to make sure that I have a deer tag in either Colorado or in Utah every fall, and I like to have an August, September timeframe deer hunt, and then likewise, I want to have an archery elk tag. And my elk tags, I try to draw a tag either in New Mexico, Colorado, or Arizona. And I'd like to go do my deer hunt before I roll into elk, just for simple reasons that elk get bugling later and most of the archery deer seasons start before the elk seasons, right?
Right.
Except for what Colorado just did this year. And so, you know, I look around, and then I really view New Mexico as just a bonus. I tell a lot of my family or friends that, but if I draw a tag in New Mexico, it really is just a bonus for me. So I focus hard on trying to find a tag somewhere that I can draw in Utah or in Colorado. And I was telling my brother, we were going through it the other day, my brother Wes, and I think we've killed deer in 8 different units in Colorado. And nice. So, like, I mean, I'm honestly saying that. It's like we just look at where we can draw tags, what's the easiest place to get a tag, and we'll just hunt different areas and spend the time exploring. And it gives us all summer long, whether, you know, it's a Utah tag or Colorado tag, you can spend all summer scouting preparation of it. And that's some of the best time to be in the woods anyways. The weather's wonderful. You get to watch the deer grow. You learn more about habits. It's just everything about it is just, I love it.
Yeah, I haven't drawn a tag in Colorado for deer. I know, you know, back in the day when I used to go there for elk, I used to just buy a tag for archery, you know, and it was just a secondary creature that I got to hunt, you know, that and bear while I was hunting elk, but I've never killed a deer in Colorado. I have quite a bit of points now, I think. I gotta look, probably 5 or 6. Which is pretty good for there since they only started it. Right? The archery stuff only started recently. Again, like probably in the last 10 years, right? Because it used to be you just bought an archery tag if you over the counter.
Yeah, it's like any good thing. They don't last forever. So
yeah.
Latch on to them while you can, and then that's going to change.
So I think the last 2 years I put in for rifle tags, but yeah, I don't know. I might have to revisit that coming up here since I look like I'm going to be getting a rifle tag anytime soon. But I've been very intrigued about going to hunt there because I know Colorado has probably one of the best mule deer herds in the country. And, you know, like the potential to shoot a good buck is basically in every unit. Like, you know, you were saying you shot bucks in 8 different units. So it's definitely something I want to look into.
The record books kind of prove that, right? Colorado's king when it comes to mule deer. So.
Yeah, for sure.
And,
so,
yeah, I mean you can't discount other states though. My brother and I actually both we have Colorado tags and Utah tags this year, and I'm impressed with Utah's management. I know there's pros and cons in every single state, and you can pick on them or you can find ways of improvement. But if you look at even Utah's deer herd in general, it seems like it's doing well.
Yeah.
One of the few states that they're doing a lot of different things to try to manage their deer and increase deer numbers. So. Like I enjoy hunting in Utah as well. So,
yeah, I've only really specifically hunted for deer I've hunted 2 different units, but most of my hunting has been in one. And, you know, I haven't seen a lot of giants, but I've seen a shit ton of deer and a lot of bucks, like great buck to doe ratio. So I agree with you. I mean, from what experience I do have, hunting Utah, and the year before was the first year that I didn't fill a tank, and I was only there for 3 days and I had to cut my trip short. But I've had great success, both elk and deer in Utah. I think they're doing a pretty good job over there. What season do you prefer to hunt?
Yeah, it's not, well, the one I can get a tag for. So that's the short answer for it, right?
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, it's easier to draw archery tags in general, but I don't know that that's always the case. I've hunted a few muzzleloader hunts just because they're easier to get a hold of in different areas, maybe specific New Mexico, because it's a bit easier to get a muzzleloader tag from time to time. But I like to hunt with a bow, and if I can hunt early season while bucks are still a little docile in the summer pattern, I would much rather do that. If I can get a January tag, then you know I love having that as well. I like
the early season, the real early season, and I like the rut, and everything else in between sucks in my opinion. But
everything else is for the rifle hunters, and it's hard. So.
Yeah. Well, it's harder to find deer. I don't know that it's necessarily any harder to kill them. Definitely harder to find them, like find good ones, I think. Yeah. Anyway, but that's just me. I do love the rut. Something about the rut has always been like you see more deer, you see more action, they're up on their feet longer, you know, they're a little stupid. A little lovesick. So, I don't know. I've always enjoyed the rut. And that might have came from the fact that I, you know, was primarily a whitetail hunter when I was a kid because I grew up in New York. But everybody looks forward to the rut in the whitetail community. But I don't know. I like velvet bucks too. Don't get me wrong. I've still yet to kill a big, what I would consider a big velvet buck. I think my biggest velvet buck is like 140 inches, but I don't know what it is. I just, something always just falls apart on me. But
I'd love to hunt a hardhorn and a big hardhorn buck. I mean, that's been one of my goals, is to actually try to get a really good hardhorn buck. And I agree with you. The rut is a lot of fun, and it's always amazing what comes out of the woodwork when the rut happens. I almost view those hunts as kind of two different things. You know, when you hunt early season, you find the buck, you pattern them, you know which buck you're going to go after, and so there's an allure to that, and I love the aspect of the planning and preparation and research and everything that goes into that part of the hunt.
Right.
And that's probably what attracts me, is because I feel like a lot of it is in my control. It's the amount of time that I spend in the woods. It's the amount of time I spend scouting. You know, it's my investment that pays the dividend. And then on the rut hunts, those are a lot of fun too, because it's almost like Christmas morning every morning. You get up and it's just like, holy cow, what's going to happen today? What buck am I going to find? Or, you know, what am I going to turn up? Because it's always something new. You know, bucks are traveling, moving.
Right.
You know, you might find a buck that you're filing or patterning and whatnot like that. But I mean, just in general terms, if I generalize it, you can't scout a buck, or I haven't been able to scout a buck in October and November and then go back in December or January and kill him, because they'll end up shifting and moving, their patterns change, you know, because of the ruts going on, right?
Definitely.
And so,
definitely.
But there's something fun about that. You know, like I said, every morning is like a Christmas morning. What's going to happen and what buck's going to stroll through and, you know, what's going to change. So,
right. You know, so what I have noticed about there, because I do spend a lot of time hunting the rut, and here specifically in Arizona, and even back east when I go hunt the rut for whitetail, and I learned this a long time ago. You know, when your scouting comes about, it's just like elk hunting. There's rutting grounds, you know? Mm-hmm. And year sure. after year, bucks will come and cycle through there. But mm-hmm. the difference is, like you said, you're not going to go preseason scouting and know. This is a scouting that you figure out the year before and hope that buck mm-hmm. don't get killed. You're finding where all the does are at, high concentration does, and you know, like looking for the rubs and all that stuff from the year before, and that's usually where the bucks will be again. And you really only have like a 3 or 4 day window to get that buck killed. Mm-hmm. You know, so the day that he shows up, he's going to probably only be there for a couple days, four days max, and then he's going to move on to the next spot. And you might know where that next spot is. You know, he's going to travel to, they have this like loop that they do. And he mm-hmm. might cycle back through that same area again, just like elk do, you know, 10, 12 days later. And like you said, you never know who's going to show up. You never know what you're going to see. It's just like Christmas morning. And, it's exciting. I think it's exciting. And I feel like the cool thing about that, especially here, is I like to run and gun a lot. So you can pick up and move, you know, pick up and move and be in new places and see new faces, you know, new bucks mm-hmm. running around. And it's a cool time of year.
It is.
So, when you're doing your scouting, what are you doing? Run me through what you do for scouting. Actually, what are you looking for in a hunting area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother and I were just, my wife says that's all we talk about and think about. But we were discussing it yesterday, my brother and I, just kind of our plans and strategies. And like we mentioned earlier, we spend a lot of the summer camping with the kids fishing. And I'll do a lot of camping trips early in the spring and summer with the kids or the family, just exploring country. And then by the time July rolls around, we try to get their backpacks ready to go, and we start backpacking into country. And I like to fish, but the moment I get in the high country, it's like I could care less about fishing, and I'd rather just be behind glassing deer or elk, you know?
Yep.
And so every weekend we can get away in July up to the season, we try to spend it in the mountains hiking and backpacking and finding deer. And for us, it does a couple things. One, it gets me acclimated and ready for it. Mm-hmm. And physically, you know, I'll try to work out all year long, but until you're at 13,000 feet or no, it's not, right? I mean, there's not much oxygen up there, and it's different when you have a 30, 40 pound pack on your back, stuff like that. So just physically going through that week after week conditions your body so you're ready for it in the hunt season. So, and I mentioned it earlier, but I love finding multiple plans and multiple bucks that we can hunt. You know, I don't want just one plan, because I've been in situations where like I have my buck I want to hunt or my area, and then you show up and the trailhead's full of people, or you backpack in there and you're overloaded with people. And so I like to have multiple different options. They're always strategizing and planning, and we'll spend a lot of the summer and spring just trying to, like everybody else, you're scouring over Google Earth, looking at trails, maps, all of the stuff, just trying to analyze it. But until you get boots on the ground and get in the country, we've all experienced that where you look at something on Google Earth and then you get in there and it's like, this is not even what I envisioned it like. You know, things change a little bit.
Right. It's all
the process, right?
Yeah. It's good to have options, but that's also a double-edged sword for me too. Like I feel like when I have too many options, I second guess myself, like, oh, why am I here? I should have been over there. Should have went to that other spot. But then if you have, you know, the flip side of that is having all your eggs in one basket, like you said, you show up and you're like, oh shit, now what am I going to do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever show up to an area blind or is, you know, do you always have everything scouted out?
You know, we have. I would say it's less and less anymore just because we've been into more and more of the units, been on more and more trailheads.
Right.
So, you know, us exploring blind country is probably, it's more like we've been in an area and we just want to go one more basin maybe because we've hunted an area for a number of days and we're just trying to reach out a little bit. for us to go in on a brand new trailhead, it's like I've been on most of the trails and trailheads. So, and I generally know where I want to be back, you know, based on what tag I have, I know trailheads I want to start on. And then if we can spend 4 to 6 weeks hiking those different trails, I mean, you can cover a lot of country.
That's a lot of time, 4 to 6 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
The average guy is, you know, not going to have that much time on his hands to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your starting point when you, you know, you're picking an area? What's your starting point to locate bucks?
Anything high. So we were discussing a little bit as well, my brother and I, but I like finding an area that I can get into, one, but then I'm always looking for a basin maybe that's one off from a trail or any access point.
Sure.
I've hunted basins and you'll find bucks near trailheads or near trails, but it just seems like there's a little bit more foot traffic, whether it's just even Colorado gets a lot of backpackers and Labor Day weekend floods full of people just hiking and exploring. And it's cool because the country is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so use that pressure. You know, if I don't want to necessarily hunt the deer that's right off the trail that everybody's walking by and bumping and just, you know, maybe disrupting a stalk. I'd rather be one basin off of that or on the backside of the ridge from it or things like that. And then it's just vegetation wise too. So we've all seen the basins that are just beautiful, soft rolling basins, you know, covered with flowers and grass, and they're just gorgeous. Those basins, in my experience, just based on the areas I've hunted, they're going to be loaded full of elk early morning, but they're not full of deer. It seems like the deer are like borderline sheep and goats, and mm-hmm. they're oftentimes in the steeper. It's a little bit more steeper country, maybe a little bit more rock. And then the topography has a little bit more topography, which helps as far as stalking. And maybe that's why I attract to it, is because I feel like it can actually make it happen in that type of country as well.
Right. What kind of vegetation do you feel like the deer that you're hunting prefer?
Up there, if you can find the willows, that's obviously a plus. Not every location has the willows, though. And so it's other forbs and grasses that the deer are feeding on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's we were watching it actually this weekend. We went into some of the high country, and you could see the mountain greening up as it goes up, you know, as the snow's starting to melt off. And it seems like to me those deer just kind of move up with that snow line and with the fresh growth.
Yeah. Is there anything specific that you, when you see it, you're like, oh, there's going to be deer in here? If you see this, you're like, you know for sure you're going to have a buck in that.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they go back to some of the, you mentioned it about rut areas and whatnot. And I think the same thing holds true for even summering areas. That, I mean, like my experience has been, I end up finding bucks in some of the same basins year over year.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We hunted a bunch of different units, but you hop around into them, you keep a log of what basins and what areas, and you know, you just kind of start figuring out the pattern to it, I guess. I don't know if it's, well, I'll go back to it. I think a lot of it's based on pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up there, the deer have feed. There's feed everywhere. I guess that's what amazes me about Colorado is you go into the high country and it's like there's an abundance of feed. Why is there not more animals up in this country? But then for me, I get one ridge off of the trail or just, you know, something slightly around the corner from the where most people travel, and that's mm-hmm. oftentimes where you find the animals, by the deer or the elk.
So gotcha.
It doesn't always have to be 10 miles in or 12 miles in. So don't let me.
Well, you won't find me there. That's 12 miles.
Yeah, so we're not always that deep either. So.
4 or 5 miles, maybe 12. I'm out.
Yeah.
Oh man. What are some behavioral things about mule deer that you've learned over the years that like contribute to your success? You know, hopefully that's a clear enough question, but
yeah, I would. So, well, I guess the way I would play that out is, it's always about the wind and the high country. That's the hardest thing that you battle whenever I hunt mule deer in the high country is the wind. And so, and the deer are always trying to put the wind in their favor too. But if you can get above the buck where you feel like you're coming from above or at his same level, then that's definitely an advantage. And then if you can get the wind coming up the mountain rather than blowing down, so when your thermals are going up, that's probably the key, I think, for hunting mule deer in the high country. We've all hunted deer and elk, and their biggest defense is their nose. So you got to be able to fool their nose. You can't fool their nose. And so you can get away with a little bit of movement. You can get away, especially even in the high country, with noise. You roll rocks and stuff, because if you've ever been in any of that high country, you notice that there's always a rock rolling, especially if you're in real steep stuff that has cliffs and whatnot. But you can get away with some of the noise, but you got to have the wind played right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Wind. I don't know. I feel like mule deer also rely heavily on their eyesight. I mean, they rely on all their senses, of course, but
mm-hmm. They do.
Yeah, they're very sight driven deer.
Yeah, if they hear you and then see you, it's done.
Yeah.
But if they smell you, they don't have to see you and they don't have to hear you. If they smell you, it's over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Exactly.
So it seems like the other senses are kind of like, you know, they almost want a double confirmation, or it just is too close if the noise is too close or something like that.
Right. So walk me through a stalk. You've spotted a buck up in a basin. He's in a good spot. He's bedded. He's in a place that you believe he's not going to go anywhere. What are you doing? Like, what's your plan of action? I mean, obviously, you know, without knowing the topography exactly, you're not going to be able to tell me the course and, you know, how are you going to do it. But what are your basic steps to planning a stalk?
Mm-hmm. I can, maybe what I can do is I'll just tell you a story of the buck I harvested last year.
Perfect.
So when that buck was more of a midday. I think when we glassed that buck up, we'd been hunting another basin, you know, put all the bucks to bed, really didn't find any bucks we wanted. So we hopped over into a new basin, and it was mid morning. It was probably about 10 o'clock before we rolled over into that basin. And when we did, shortly after even just setting up our glass, I was able to find that buck. And he was bedded underneath a big boulder that was probably about a car size in some willows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those areas where the fold was right, the vegetation, it's like there's probably going to be a buck bedded right there. And you put your glass up and sure enough, there he is, right? And it was a big basin between us and them. We obviously had an elevated position on it. And I was able to drop down and stay within sight. So I want to say I was probably 700-800 yards away and still within sight of the buck. And I had to circle the basin kind of I was really slow, just like crawling through the basin above him until I got out of his sight. And then, like I said, all that was probably at 800 yards or further away. And once I got out of the sight, then I was able to close the distance quickly. And that's, you know, I guess that's one of the things, know when to go fast and when to slow down. And I was able to get within, so I got, I don't know, probably within 100 yards of the buck, dropped all my pack, my shoes, everything, and then was able to slide down in on the buck. And when I poked out on the buck, he was already feeding. My brother and friend, Steve, were up on the hill above me. And so they'd signal me that the buck was up feeding at that point in time, which is actually, I would prefer that if the buck's feeding over just bedding, trying to look around and find danger.
Yep.
When I popped out, there was actually,
I think I've killed one, maybe two deer. That's a lie, but less than five deer bedded. The rest have all been feeding, or I kill most of my bucks in the rut. So, but I would say feeding or chasing a doe, but
On their feet, right?
Yep,
preoccupied.
Exactly. Making their own noises, mm-hmm. chewing, yep. doing stuff that's mm-hmm. not staring for intently for danger.
Yep, exactly. So when I saw the buck first, it's always interesting. It was a pair. There were two different bucks together, a real small buck and then the one I killed. And it was actually the small buck that spotted me first. And he was just real wiry too, but they saw me at, and I was about 50 yards. So I popped out a little bit closer than I wanted to at that moment in time. And I didn't have a shot on the buck, and they ended up blowing and running around the corner. So they ran out the end of a ridge. And when they did, I could tell they didn't really know what was going on. It was one of those things where they saw me, but they didn't smell me and they didn't hear me. So they weren't quite sure what was going on. So they ran out, like I said, around, there's a ridge line or a spine, and they ran around the corner of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to go back, grab my shoes, and circled all the way around on the backside of that ridge, and then came back over on top of them. And when I did, I was able to pop out right on top of where the buck was. And he was there looking at his back trail, right? Trying to figure out what just spooked him, expecting something to come right down his trail. And so in theory, I kind of came in the back door, if you will, right?
Uh-huh.
And then was able to come down on him and got close enough to get a shot on him and harvested him. You know, and that's just, you know, knowing their habits, knowing that, like, this buck is not going to run plumb out of the country. He's probably just going to run down the ridge and try to figure out what's going on, because he didn't know for sure when he ran from me. It wasn't positive what was going on and what he was running from. He just knew he needed to vacate that area.
And I think, honestly, and I don't know if this is one of those areas, but I think this is one of those benefits to hunting areas where that gets quite a bit of hiking pressure, because deer are used to seeing humans and them not posing a threat to them. So, yeah, they're not going to stick around, but they're not going to, like you said, they're not going to, you know, move three bases over.
Yep.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I was going to ask you to share a story with us, and you already did. So,
I got tons of stories.
All right, man. Let's hear. Let's close it out with another one. Tell me your favorite. Tell me your favorite story. And
I don't know if I have a favorite. They're all fun, and they all have their own meaning and memories to them. So I guess maybe another experience is the buck that I harvested. We shot that buck in 2018. And I was hunting again with my brother, Wesley, and then Steve. And we'd actually found this buck scouting. And there were several bucks in there that we were wanting to try to harvest. And when they went over the top of the ridge, and when they did, we were able to get to the top and then glass off the backside and saw the bucks. It was one of those things where as soon as the sun started hitting that buck or getting close to the buck, or he would run before the thermals were even right. He just didn't want to be in the sun. And so before the sun even hit him, he bailed off of the top and went down into some timber, into a small pocket of timber, and bedded up. So we were able to actually circle around and get onto a little point and glass back into the timber. And we got probably a little bit close. I think we were about 250 yards away from the buck that time.
Wow.
When we set up to glass, and we found him in his bed. I think there was three other bucks in there with him. And when we glassed that buck up in his bed, you know, that's like instantly, it's like, man, somebody needs to go shoot that buck. We need to make this happen now. You know, he's in a bed. He's going to probably just feed around in that timber most of the day, but the wind is right. It's blowing uphill now. So let's get over there and get it done. And I honestly turned to my brother and Steve, and I'm like, somebody needs to go shoot that buck. And we all just kind of like looked at each other, and it's like, well, I don't know if I want to go shoot that buck. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, finally it's like, well, nobody's going to go, I'm going to go try to get that buck, you know? And it was one of the easier stalks I made just because of where we were set up and where the buck was bedded. I was able to come out on a rock outcrop right above the buck. I think that one was like 37 yards.
Wow.
Is what the cut yardage was to the buck. But it was super steep, you know, and was able to make a pretty good shot on the buck. And then he went down off the ridge after I hit him and then piled up down in the timber. But yeah, that, and maybe what was, I don't know, it's the whole experience. It's having, you know, a brother and friend there with you to see it and experience it. But then the pack out on that buck is probably one of the most grueling pack outs that I've ever experienced myself.
Oh, that sucks.
It's a lot of work. And well, and I'll maybe to extend on that a little bit, it's that same year Steve harvested his first high country buck, and he actually took a really good buck that year. We went back in three different weekends and extended weekends. And my brother missed that buck, the buck Steve killed. My brother missed that buck, I think, three times. And Steve missed the buck, I think, two or three times. And then was eventually able to kill him. And I was able to watch the whole thing, guide him in on the stock. And the day he killed it, I think he shot at him two times. And so we were able to, you know, just stay on the buck and the buck had moved. And when he ended up killing him, the buck got into some timber and was bedded in there with three other bucks as well. And Steve was able to get close enough. And when they fed out that evening, he was able to actually harvest the buck. And he made a great shot on it. The buck barely went over the hill and piled up. And when we got down there, it's like the flood of emotions that overcome trying to accomplish something like that in the high country. It's just, it's incredible. And I think it's because you work so hard to get in there. You work so hard to make it all happen. And it almost feels impossible. It's like when you look at that country, it's like, how in the heck can you ever traverse that country and make something like that happen? And then when it does, it's just the overwhelming like sense of accomplishment. It'll make a grown man cry. It's amazing, the experience, and just how hard it is, but how rewarding the experience is.
Right. Well, that's why I think
that's, I think that's the lure. That's why I go back year after year. That's right.
Sure. Oh, that's a cool story. So I got another question for you, because you said it a few times. So what do you guys have, like a special language that you've developed when you're guiding each other in?
We have certain things, and it varies. So sometimes we use walkie-talkies or radios. Other times we use hand signals. It just kind of varies. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the experience with Steve, this is really funny, because you talk about hand signals and what to do, right?
Right.
And Steve was within archery range of these bucks, just kind of hunkered behind a boulder. And I could see parts of the bucks in the timber. Steve never could see them, just because of the way the land laid. Mm-hmm. And when those bucks fed, and then he would look up to me every so often to look for hand signals. That was one of those times we didn't have radios, but we were using hand signals. And when he would look at me with his binos, you know, I just indicate whether the buck was sleeping. So, you know, you lay your head over, hold like your hand's a pillow and you're laying down, you know, different things like that, right? Or the buck's up feeding and I get up on my feet and kind of walk around like I'm feeding, you know, bent over, and I'm just kind of grazing, do things like that. And then the buck moved out into an area where I'm like, Steve needs to be shooting that buck. And Steve was just kind of sitting back, you know, not knowing what's going on, because he couldn't see the buck yet. Mm-hmm. And so like I stand up and I don't have my bow with me because my tag is already filled, but I'm drawing like my bow back trying to shoot the buck. Right. And I'm doing this like with excitement. And so finally Steve catches, you know, what that new signal is. And he turns back around and, you know, and he sees the buck. And it wasn't, you know, just minutes later that he was able to harvest the buck after that. So you talk about hand signals you work through. That's probably one we didn't really work through beforehand, but we were able to make it work out, right?
Yeah. So. We're so spoiled over here in AZ. Like, you know, even in Utah, you're allowed to use radios. When I have the ability to use a radio, I use a radio, you know, like.
Yeah.
I grew up hunting out here, you know, using radio. So unfortunately it's become a little bit of a crutch, but, you know, hunting in Wyoming and a couple other states where you couldn't, you know, Montana, where you couldn't use them, and South Dakota, it's good to have both. Cause like when you do go back to having a radio, it's like, oh, it's like that much easier. Once you learn how to, you know, to do without. So,
mm-hmm.
Cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing some stories with us and sharing some knowledge with us. It was a pleasure to have you on, and wish you good luck for the year.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. So,
yeah, no problem at all. Maybe I'll have to get your brother Wesley on one of these days.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
All right, buddy.
That'd be way good.
Sounds good. I will, I'll keep in touch with you.
Thanks, John. Thanks. Appreciate it. You take care.
Thanks for coming on. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.